Hello, I'm Dr. Eric Topol, Editor-in-Chief of Medscape. Joining me today for Medscape One-on-One is Elizabeth Holmes, founder and president and CEO of Theranos, and we're here in Palo Alto, California, at headquarters. And Elizabeth, welcome, and this is going to be, a fascinating discussion.
Oh, thank you. It's wonderful to be here and have you here.
Well, this is a story which is, I guess, been brewing for a long time. You were at Stanford, and I guess was it age 19 or so?
Yes.
You decided to change your path, is that right?
Yeah.
And what made you think, I'm onto something and I want to not just do college, I got something else that's probably bigger than that?
Well, I knew that I wanted to do something that could make a difference in the world. And to me, there was nothing greater that I could build than something that would change the reality in our healthcare system today, which is that when someone you love gets really, really sick, most of the time, by the time you find that out, it's too late to be able to do something about it. And in those moments, it's heartbreaking because there's nothing you wouldn't do. And as I started thinking about how you could change that, I became very focused in the laboratory space in the context of the power of laboratory data, which drives, some say 80% of clinical decisions, The ability to help make access to that information more available to people, and to try to create actionable information that would be accessible to people at the time it really matters.
So you're a college student in engineering, I guess, and you say, I got a big idea, a big ambitious idea. Yeah. I'm going to start this company. What did you know right away? I'm going to call it Theranos, and I'm going to be the creative destruction of laboratory medicine? Or
I knew that this is what I wanted to do with my life, and when I designed the first sort of technology layout on how you could create a system to do this, and figured out that I had built something that would work, that was it.
It took a long road, though, too, and you've kept it really quiet throughout that. Like, nobody knew what you were doing for almost a decade, I guess, right?
Yeah.
So was that hard to be slogging along all that time and keeping wraps around all the activity?
Well, there's a huge amount of work that we've done to be able to get here, but it's been an incredible privilege to be able to do this work, and being able to talk about it now is amazing because we haven't done that for 10 years, as you said.
Well, I kind of liken this in some ways to Elon Musk and kind of what was done with the Tesla electric car, because it wasn't just that you built a new way to do a lab test. It was the entire process. So just like with the Tesla car, the way you buy the car, the way your car is serviced, the way your car is charged. I mean, everything about it is totally different. And you've done that similar thing here with laboratory medicine. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people yet don't know about Theranos and how you've kind of re-engineered this whole thing. I know I had a finger stick. I wouldn't even call it a finger stick. It's painless. I didn't know that was possible earlier today. And that's only one little piece of what you've re-engineered. So can you give us a sense of how comprehensive a sweep this is across what was stuck, I guess, in the 1960s? Nothing had changed for, 50-plus years?
Well, it's, as you said, we believe that to really be able to help contribute in this quest for actionable information, it's a system that's required. And, it's not sufficient to build a great test. You need to be able to create a framework in which that test can become accessible. And so we started with the premise that if we could make it possible to do any laboratory test from a tiny sample or a few drops of blood, then that service would be more accessible to people. And we spent many years redeveloping every test that's recognized by Medicare in the form of a CPT code to be able to run it on a tiny sample. And then we began to think about how do you then make that service accessible? And we looked at the habits that exist in terms of people getting tested. Today, you know, fear of needles is a very significant, we think rightfully so, phobia that
exists. And they usually get a bunch of tubes of blood, not even just a needle.
You get a lot of tubes of blood, and you know, we've had the opportunity to work with pediatric patients and geriatric patients and oncology patients where it can be incredibly painful for them to go through this. And we started thinking about how do we make this service accessible to those people? And to us, that meant going to them, creating a framework in which we could be, ultimately, our goal is within 5 miles of every American's home across the country. And
that's
so
a laudable goal.
We formalized a partnership, which we recently announced with Walgreens in the retail pharmacy space, to distribute this infrastructure across the country so that it could become more accessible to people. Today, it's not possible to do lab tests in many cases late at night or on a weekend. And as a result, it becomes more difficult for people to be compliant with fulfilling a requisition from a physician for doing a test. And so we looked at the combination of the tiny sample with the distributed locations as a tool for being able to help create access. And then we focused a great deal on, as we developed these tests and validated and verified them over the years, building an infrastructure that was highly automated and standardized such that the quality of the data that we generate could be used in an actionable manner by clinicians, in that we have worked to minimize much of the variability that's associated with pre-analytic processing and some of the influences of variability in lab data, like temperature or human handling.
Oh, right. And even the assays themselves. So just to start, there's more pieces of this, but one was that you were going to make this eminently more accessible,
right,
every corner drugstore kind of model.
Right.
The second is that you would make the actual draw of minimal blood,
right,
a tiny fraction of what it normally would be, and painless,
if, right,
or close to painless. Another was that you're going to make the actual assays more accurate and, you know, more precise, repeatable. So you got a lot there, but that's not all. So the next thing, too, is that the patients, well, the consumers get their information back, which,
right,
a lot of them have a hard time getting their lab tests back, right?
Yeah.
And do you think we can ever get to the point where we can consumers can just order their own blood tests?
Well, we think it's hugely important. We believe fundamentally at our core that access to high integrity diagnostic information is a basic human right, and that people should have access to this information so that we can help to catch many of these diseases earlier and hopefully understand it. And today, our tests are all physician directed.
Right. And I know the Medscape audience would agree with that largely, but I think you've also brought up another point, which is sometimes a person might know that the blood test information could really help them, and it's hard to get a hold of the physician, or they're not getting the kind of cooperation support they need. So, and another piece of it is that you have all the pricing transparent, which isn't exactly the case today in laboratory medicine. So that's another, and there's more to it than all those things, right? I mean,
The pricing was a huge area of focus for us because we worked for many years to bring down our cost structure so that we could, for the first time, begin to bill Medicare and Medicaid at significantly less than their current reimbursement thresholds, and make the commitment that if someone is uninsured, or insured or has any other situation, they get the same price.
Yeah.
And that's something that is really important to us along with this theme of access.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Now, you also, there's just so many innovative aspects to this. Mm-hmm. The blueprints have been so extensive. Mm-hmm. The pharmacists mm-hmm. are playing an active role. You're training them to do these, collect these nanotainers of blood. Is that right?
We are. Our wellness centers are next to the pharmacy inside of these retail locations. And there's a tremendous amount of knowledge in the pharmacist. And so we have trained and certified phlebotomists and or other appropriately, you know, state certified personnel. But we're also leveraging the expertise of the pharmacist in being able to provide a care framework for the patients who come in to do their tests. And that's something that we think is a wonderful application of the talent that exists in these pharmacies with respect to being able to have that level of oversight and care.
I share your view of that. That is, there's a lot of talent out there, and we haven't really harnessed it yet.
Yeah.
And you have about 1,000 different tests that you're either gearing up for or going to be offering?
We do. We've announced the first set on our website, and we're going to be systematically rolling them out.
Yeah, that's amazing. All right, so now you've got this thing going, and you're going to have many states soon, and before you know it, thousands of drugstores. When do you feel like you've really made an impact here? The model, obviously, is totally transformative. You Schumpetered laboratory medicine. It's radical. What is the end goal here, that most laboratory testing is rebooted through this new system, or is just another pathway? What do you think will be your metric of success?
Well, there's two. One is, even just in the few weeks since this service has become accessible to patients, the number of emails and phone calls and letters that we've gotten from parents who've gone through unbelievable amount of pain trying to take care of little kids where they couldn't get enough sample to be able to actually get the right information to the physician to take care of them. Mm. And they talk in great detail about the pain of what it's like to watch a child go through that, being able to help change that and make that better. I mean, that's at the core of why we did this. And the other is long-term, being able to use this infrastructure to help physicians have access to actionable information at the time it matters, so that early detection mm-hmm. becomes a reality. And there's ways in which we're beginning to help contribute to that now by virtue of the fact that we can take a tiny sample and do not need dedicated tubes of blood for each type of test that we run. We can, on a given sample, automatically reflex to other assay methodologies, which traditionally would require a separate draw, which means that if something is out of range, we can, on the same sample, run tests that a physician would like to have ordered to figure out better why it's out of range. And so, for example, in the morning, a patient could come to a wellness center. We could draw a sample. The physician could say on their requisition, if this is out of range, automatically run this. Mm-hmm. And that afternoon, when the physician sees the patient, they have all that information.
Yeah, that's a lot more intelligent way to process this sort of information, so you don't have to go back for yet another test and everything. It's not done today, so that's great.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so we're here at the, I guess, original Facebook headquarters.
Yeah.
It's kind of ironic that you set up shop here, very close to the Stanford campus.
Right.
And I guess there's so many different types of innovation that have occurred in these in this mist of Palo Alto and vicinity.
Yeah.
This has been quite a run that you've been on, and I know that to have almost a decade to be preparing for this, you know, finally go out. Do you worry about that, for example, the big lab companies, LabCorp, Quest, they're going to be threatened by this? Or, on the other hand, could the managed competition make them better? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, our focus and our thoughts right now are completely on, can we make this phlebotomy experience better for patients? And can we create a framework that helps to better provide access to actionable information? And if we can do that, then we're successful. And all of our time is in making that happen.
Yeah, well, it's pretty striking, I have to say. Now, the other thing is about turnaround time.
Yeah.
And I wanted to ask you, with all these microfluidics that are on the horizon, mm-hmm. would this be something that you could run through a smartphone microprocessor? Where do you see the technology going in that regard over the years ahead?
Yeah. Well, I think integration with the smartphone is a huge area of opportunity, which you have written a lot about, and we strongly agree with that. As we look at ways in which this could evolve in the future, the goal is faster and faster diagnosis, smaller and smaller samples, and more predictive testing in the context of being able to get better tools for early detection. And we are deeply committed to going in that direction with the way in which we can apply this infrastructure and other things we're working on.
Yeah, well, today patients have to beg and grovel days, a week yeah. after their lab tests. What did it show? And they can't get the answer typically. So this is a whole different look. So just kind of going back here, what got you into, did you have through your parents or your relatives some kind of inspiration? Or this was a big deal for you to spend such a good portion of your young life to pursue such a enormous project, if you want to call it that. It's bigger than a project. When you look back at it, is there any roots that you can understand why you could get into something like this?
Absolutely. I grew up in a family with parents whose focus was on making a difference. My dad worked in disaster relief, and to me, this is my way that I could help to make a difference.
Mm. And I one other thing that was, I'm sure a lot of people, when the Wall Street Journal article came out, which I think was the first foray of, oh, there's something big going up there. Theranos, Elizabeth and her team have something major percolating there. There were a number of people on your board from the Secretary of State, George Shultz, and others. Mm-hmm. Said, well, is there a military connection to Theranos? Any comments about that?
Well, we've been incredibly privileged to build a team of people who've become involved in this company who I had the chance to work with for many years, who have such great strategic wisdom. Mm. And as we look to make the scale of change that we want to make, as you well know, it's no small undertaking. And being able to leverage the benefit of that strategic wisdom is hugely valuable. There absolutely are applications in a huge number of areas outside of core routine clinical care, and that's something that we've had some exposure to and will continue to be involved in.
All right, now let's go fast forward a little bit. You haven't even hit 30 yet, I guess. You got Theranos; it's completely humming. Tens of thousands, everything that you describe, it's done. What's going to be your next act? You're so young to have accomplished so much.
No, this is it. This is what I want to do.
Is that right? No SpaceX or Hyperloop or anything like that in your plans?
There's to really do this and make this change. This is what I want to do for the rest of my life.
Wow, amazing. Mm-hmm. All right, well, we have really enjoyed the chance to get to know you, Elizabeth, and mm-hmm. Theranos, and congratulate you on this just phenomenal rebooting of laboratory medicine. If there ever was a portion of medicine that probably needed creative destruction. This was it, and you figured out how to do it. So big time kudos to you and all your folks at Therano. So thanks for being with us.
No, thank you so much. It's wonderful to have you here.
Yeah, so thanks so much for joining Medscape One-on-One. I'm Dr. Eric Topol, and we'll continue to try to bring you some of the most interesting people in the world. Thank you.